Vectus Radio podcasts are sponsored by Break the Cycle CIC, rebuilding self-esteem in people who have experienced domestic abuse. For more, email hello@breakthecycle.org.uk.
Every time this fella comes in, I'll get envious because he manages. He's got so much sort of, I don't know, willpower to stay thin, to stay fit, and so on. And that's why you're the fitness guru, aren't you?
That's what you call me, apparently. What? The fitness guru.
Yeah, Danny Stimpson. Welcome back. It seems like it's been ages, but it doesn't, if that makes sense.
Well, when I walked back in, it was like we were only here last week. Yeah. It was straight away. It was really good. You know, there was it was like seeing an old friend again. And I class you as a friend.
Thank you. A fat friend now. And look at you, all skinny. So you've been doing the right thing in the last 18 months.
I prefer fit than skinny, to be honest with you.
Yeah, okay. Sorry.
But I work quite hard at it. You know, it doesn't come easy. You have to work hard at it.
Well, I've worked hard at this.
Yeah.
See, my issue is that during lockdown, my wife was working at home. And before, I used to have a cooked breakfast, only a small one. And an evening meal, and in between I'll just have a banana. But now the wife's working at home, she'll say, "Do you want some lunch?" And she's not the sort of person that would just dish up an ordinary lunch. She would say, "Do you want a prawn salad or a prawn roll?" Or and you go along with it, don't you?
It all adds up, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it all adds up. Yeah,
it does. Hey, look, how are you? Because it's been ages.
Oh,
what have you been up to?
I'm very well.
Don't tell me yet.
I'm working hard. My normal businesses that earn me money, I'm working hard. I've got lots of work on. My surveying business is very successful at the moment. Got lots of really good clients, really interesting projects on. Been doing a lot of stone carving as well over the last sort of year or so. So got a couple of large commissions which are just coming to completion now. So those two bits, kind of the bits that put money into my bank account, going very nicely, thank you very much.
I forget you're a surveyor, is
that? I'm a construction surveyor and a stonemason and a stone carver. So I have two little businesses, the stone workshop, which taps into my artistic side because I'm a qualified stonemason. That's my trade background. Back when I was a teenager, I qualified as a stonemason and worked over in Chichester at the cathedral over there, English Heritage Apprenticeship on the Isle of Wight, and then retrained as a surveyor sort of late 90s, early 2000 to have a sort of a more professional career and not have to work on building sites and in a workshop and that sort of thing. So
right, okay. And I would imagine over the last 18 months, because of the nature of what you do, the building industry has gone through the roof. Is that partly the reason why you're doing all right?
Yeah. The amount of people that are looking to purchase properties and then extend and refurbish is quite extensive on the island at the moment. It's a real booming industry, and there's quite a few people have had sort of land sat ready for building a new property on, you know, new private domestic properties. I have quite a few private clients that are building new dwellings, and then I manage their properties, you know, so for the construction side of it. So tell them how much it's going to cost them, manage the contractor whilst he's building it, that sort of thing. So,
see, I forget all of that about you, because I just, Danny Stimpson, the fitness mindset, the fit mindset code,
the fit mindset code is just kind of one part of my sort of very, I would say, quirky personality. So yeah, my fitness stuff is more with regard to my mindset and my competitive nature and my sort of obsessive and driven aspect of my personality. I need sort of a process to, and a task and a challenge and a journey to go on. That's, I've done that all the way through my life, you know, found something new and shiny, and then have to go and sort of go through the process and the pain of achieving something, you know, and fitness is one of those things in my late 40s and early 50s which really resonated in my mind, and ended up obviously getting on stage and having a spray tan and being judged for my physique a couple of years ago. So, and I'm probably going to do that again, I would have said. So,
crikey. Yeah. There's some time before I could do that, I'll tell you at the moment. Does it help having, because your wife's a dancer, isn't she?
She was an ex-professional dancer. She's now a nurse, and she's been a nurse for the last sort of 30-odd years. But, yeah, she was an ex-professional dancer.
At St Mary's?
What, dancing?
No, not
yeah. Yeah, she's a nurse up at St Mary's.
She's one of the legends and one of the heroes.
She is, yeah. My wife is an absolute living angel. One of the most amazing people that I well, have been blessed to know and been fortunate enough to be married to for the last 30 years. We've been married 30 years just this year, so which is quite incredible. The only her only fault is the fact she's got terrible taste in men. That's what I tell her.
Do you know what a lovely thing to hear?
She slaps me.
Yeah. What a lovely thing to hear, and that's really nice. So are you in the doghouse or something?
Well, generally, yeah. That's a permanent location for married men.
So your wife used to be a dancer, yeah. So I'm guessing that she's super fit and still is. Does that help you?
Yeah, I'd say we're both very fit, not necessarily naturally fit, but we're both sort of relatively competitive for that side. So she likes her fitness. She does. She teaches fit steps, you know, the sort of Strictly Come Dancing right. fitness dance classes. She does that once a week, and she likes a sort of body pump and that sort of thing. So yeah, she keeps fit as well. So it helps that we both do it. Yeah.
How did that work during lockdown? Did you do stuff online? Did you stop?
Well, no, we did when the gyms were closed. We went out for walks. You know, during the summertime, we would go kayaking and that sort of thing. We just bought some paddle boards. We did a lot of walking, and then we started running together and that sort of thing. I had some weights in the garden. My daughter and her boyfriend would do a sort of like a little boot camp fitness regime on the grass in the garden, and Donna would do that as well. And she'd do her own little body pump stuff with a set of weights. So yeah, we maintained the sort of regime. Which is, I think, is really important, because when you stop, you know, it's really hard to kind of pick it all back up again, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. Are you looking at me when you say that?
Well, looking at, I know people look at me; they think I'm nuts, because I am quite relentless with it, and but I enjoy the process. I enjoy, you know, I put 2 stone on over the winter period, but with the clear intention to lose the 2 stone yeah. for the summer. So, you know,
me too.
You know, 13 stone sort of just before Christmas, and now I'm 11 stone. So, you know,
right.
But I did it on purpose. You know, there's a method to it. So,
yeah. Well, I put it on and didn't take it off. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah, but I like the word yet.
Yet, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
if you
yeah.
put the word yet, then there's not a sort of inevitable outcome to the situation. It's still open-ended.
I'll get around to it. Yeah. I will get around to it. I can't wait for the wife to go back to work at work, although that's probably not going to happen for a while yet.
Right.
So
yeah.
I might have to sort of say, look, let's just have bananas. Let's go back to having bananas at lunchtime. That will help. Now, look, one of the reasons why you wanted to come in was, one, we wanted to see you anyway and see how you were and so on. And can we talk about this now?
We can do.
I mean, you said you had something. Now, look, I'll be honest with you. I had a little guess in my mind, because you told me I've got a big reveal, and I thought he's piled on loads of weight, and he's going to do a, like a losing the weight challenge. And I mean, when I say piled on the weight, 16, 17 stone.
Yeah.
Have you ever been that heavy?
No. 13.2, 13.3 was the heaviest I've ever been, which was when I started my fitness journey at sort of 48 and a half. So,
you porker.
Yeah, yeah. I know a lot of people, that's their goal, isn't it? I understand that, yeah.
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 Then I thought you'd put on weight and you'd bulked out and you were going into, I don't know, Mr. Charles Atlas type, you know, and do that. You know, Mr. whatever they call it now, Universe?
Mr. Universe, no. My physique is purely kind of board shorts and men's physique. I'm never going to be that kind of the Arnold Schwarzenegger bodybuilding type. I don't hold enough muscle for that. So.
And I never guessed until you came in and sat down and you brought some paperwork. And I can't see because I haven't got my glasses on.
Yeah.
And then I thought, I know what it is now.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us?
I'm writing a book.
Writing a book.
I'm writing a book, which most people go, oh, yeah, you're writing a book. But people that know me know that probably the single most difficult thing for me to do is to write, because I'm dyslexic, diagnosed dyslexic in the mid-70s, had to go to a school which sort of accounted for children with learning difficulties back in the 70s, because the education department on the Isle of Wight was not happy to accept that it was a condition that needed any extra help. So I went to a boarding school over on the mainland. And that's probably where my mindset and my outlook on life definitely changed, going to boarding school and going through that let's call it regime, shall we say. And the fact that I'm dyslexic means that obviously reading and writing I don't find easy, but I have a system to allow me to get through life, you know. And I thought, well, I always challenge people to find something difficult to do. You know, it's one of my sort of mantras, you know, go and find the harder path, because you've basically become a better version of yourself if you go on the harder path.
Yeah.
And I relentlessly do that in life. So I thought, what's going to be difficult for me? Well, during lockdown, to find something to sort of engage my mind as well, I thought, well, I'll see if I can write my system down. And instead of doing it as a kind of like a textbook with regard to just being a guide to the system that I sort of apply to most things if I want to achieve an outcome, like my fitness regime, I thought I'd do it as a sort of a parable story. So it's kind of a three-part thing. It's autobiographical in the first bit. It's there's a parable story in the middle about two characters, which hopefully people could get sort of engaged into and relate to, and then there's a kind of a lessons learned section at the end, which sort of reflects back on how my system works, why I applied it, and what the lessons from the parables will actually relate to with regard to the system, and how the three are all connected. And I found the actual process quite, as we said, cathartic, and it was really good to sort of sit down and just go through, you know, how I've developed from a dyslexic 7-year-old boy going to boarding school at sort of 10 and 11, and then turning into a little bit of an unruly teenager like most people, and then turning into the kind of obsessed, relentless individual that I am now. So
that's brilliant. I mean, it's great news, and I think it's going to help a lot of people. Obviously, you know, I'm guessing you get something out of it as well. And I don't mean financially. I mean, you know, in there. I mean, you know, I just think that's a lovely thing to be able to do. And I think someone once said we've all got a book in us.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the beginning. I want to ask you all sorts of things. When is it coming out and so on? But going back to, you know, when you... Because obviously when you go back, and I'm only assuming that you're roughly the same age as me.
Yeah, I'm 54.
Yeah, roughly. I mean, I was 56 this year.
Yeah.
So give or take a year or two. Yeah. You know, so going back and finding out at the age of 7, did you say?
I was about 6 or 7 when I was diagnosed dyslexic. And that's in the early 70s. And dyslexia was, even though the condition had been, you know, known about for a long, long time, probably maybe, you know, 100 years prior to, you know, the mid-70s, it wasn't really anything that was particularly familiar with regard to, academic requirements. You know, you were basically just labelled, like, you know, the thickie in the class, and that was it. But now we obviously understand how a dyslexic brain works. And, somebody asked me a little while ago, shout out to Pete Luther, he asked me a question, if I could go back to that 7 or 8-year-old boy, what would I say to him? And I could honestly say, without even hesitating, I would go back and say that your dyslexic mind is a superpower. It's not a condition that you have to fear or worry about.
Yep.
It's a superpower because you think about things in a different way. Not in a bad way, just a different way. You see the world differently. You assess information differently, and you can use it to your advantage. Mind's eye with regard to my stone carving and my artistic side is phenomenal. You know, I see things in three dimensions and I can spin them around in my head. You know, so when I'm carving something, I can actually see the outcome before I even start. You know, I can see it in the stone. And it's probably why me working in construction, my dyslexic brain allows me to see, you know, 2D flat drawings. I see them in three dimensions. So I can understand how a house can be put together and how all the component parts actually fit together. I can visualise it much easier than the most normal people. That's an ability, not a disability.
Absolutely. I can't believe that. You know, that's a brilliant thing, a brilliant way to look at it, and that is a superpower. There was a young lady that came in on the course, and we had a TV documentary that went out just before lockdown, and they'd been filming us. And about 5 students following their journey. And we went over to see it, went over to the BBC, we watched it. It then went out live, and there was a young lady on it, Ophelia. And Ophelia made the quote of, you know, she wasn't dyslexic, she had autism.
Yeah.
has autism, and she says, I look at it as it's my superpower. So same quote. And I look at people now and I think, don't use it as, don't think that you're disabled. Don't think you've got a disability. No, it is. Look at it the other way around. And you're absolutely right. And it's actually helped you in the future, isn't it?
Because it has,
look at it in a much, much different...
I mean, obviously, as a 7 or 8 year old, I didn't understand that. I just had this label of something which I didn't really understand. And then there was the realisation that I was going to have to go to a school which wasn't, you know, a normal school, you know, in the context of, you know, comprehensives or whatever, you know, as most people would go to, because of my, you know, ability, disability, whatever, whichever way you want to see it. So I didn't understand that at that time. And the whole process of going to the boarding school that I went to, I actually went to two boarding schools, one which was more geared towards kids with you know, learning difficulties. And then I went to the same school as my brother a little bit later on. But that was because I had I was a reasonably gifted athlete and sportsman as a child, you know, academically hopeless, yeah, but sport I was good at, and I went to a rugby playing school, basically on the back of my school that I was originally at, played this other school who were one of the top rugby playing schools in the county, and because I absolutely destroyed their team for the first time, you know, on my own, they asked me to come and take the 11 plus exam to get into the school. I failed it miserably. And they still let me in because they wanted me in their rugby team. So
they fixed it, didn't they?
They did. I failed miserably.
Got that wrong, but so, let's adjust that. He'd done well. Yeah. You got 96%. I've just found out. It's just online. You can check it out.
Yeah,
how brilliant is that, though?
But I think it was 6.9%, and they just took the decimal point out of the way. So,
so I mean, when you think of you know, dyslexia now, you know, I'm guessing that things have moved on so much. And they pick up things much quicker, and they've probably got, I don't know, more ways of helping. I'm guessing. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, people are like, oh, you've got spell check now, you know, so that helps you, doesn't it? Spell check, really, for a dyslexic, is not that much of a help. Yes, it spells the word right, but you don't necessarily know which is the right word that you're actually spelling. I read things back that I write on emails and stuff, and sometimes they're completely incoherent. When I've written it and read it the first time, it made complete sense. But then, you know, the spell checking and the autocorrect has actually, you know, changed a word for something which they thought I was writing. I thought it was the word I have written. It's not. And then it doesn't make any sense at all. So sometimes it can be a little bit of a disadvantage because you don't know that the mistake has been corrected incorrectly. But yeah, people get, especially my clients and the people I work with, my handwriting is so bad that the secretary at a company that I used to work at labelled it Danish. So she had to, any new secretary that was typing up notes and minutes and stuff and reports, you had to be fluent in Danish to understand what Danny was writing. So
no, not Danish, Danish.
Danish, exactly. Danish, yeah. So which I thought, oh, quite cool. So I write in Danish. So,
right, brilliant. Yeah. Well, I've got a superpower as well.
Yep, go on then.
I'm colourblind.
Right.
Yeah, and the way I see it is, that shirt and that jacket don't go because they're totally the wrong colours.
That's right.
So I'm sat here thinking I'm smug because I'm all right. I match.
Right.
I'm matching my own mind. Let's get back to the book then. When can we expect?
I was wondering why the yellow trousers and the mug shirt you were wearing today were looking a little bit odd.
And they've got green socks on as well. So you're writing the book. You're halfway through.
Yep.
When can we expect it to be finished?
Well, I was. I'm looking to kind of get the kind of final draft by the end of this year. So that's what I set myself. I started at the beginning of the year. And so I'm kind of, we're virtually halfway through the year, a little bit further. So I'm hoping to get the kind of the initial first draft done by the end of this year. Then, you know, put it out to people that I know can give me honest appraisal, my wife being one. My mum and dad will be the next ones on the list. My dad, he writes books on a regular basis. He's actually a published author, my dad. Yeah.
Okay.
He'll understand this joke, but when you say that everybody's got a book in them, yeah, my dad's first book sank without a trace because it was on the Titanic.
Right.
So that was his first book, and it's quite a good book, apparently. But so, yeah, he's a published author already. So
who haven't read the book then?
Oh, I haven't read it. No, I looked at the pictures. Are awesome.
Well, you're expecting him to read your book.
Yeah.
Least you could do is read his.
Yeah. Well, I suppose so, yeah. I'll pretend I've read it. People buy me books, and you know, for birthdays and Christmas and that sort of thing, and I do start to, you know, have a go at reading books, but I just lose interest.
Yeah, me
just
too.
Lose interest.
Which brings me on to my next question. I am the same as you. I lose interest. Mm. I can't get comfortable for a start, and turning the pages over, and you're scanning the words, and your mind is wandering.
Yeah.
And that's why I listen to audiobooks.
Yeah.
So will this be an audiobook?
I would definitely get it on audiobooks, yes.
Would you voice it yourself?
Nobody wants to listen to this voice, do they?
Well, yeah, you've got a great voice. But I know somebody that could do it for you.
I'm the classic. I hate hearing... When I listen to these back again, the ones we did last year, I hate the sound of my voice. I can't stand it. Now I'd get someone... someone who
I've just dropped a big in. Don't tease me.
What?
I've just said that I know someone that would do it
go
for
on,
you.
Well, you?
Yes.
Oh, I was thinking Matthew McConaughey. He's the sort of voice I'd be able to do. Yeah.
What a kick in the teeth that's been.
No, you do have you have the voice for radio. So, yeah, so. Or is it the face for radio?
The damage is done. You're going to get Matthew McConaughey. So that's fine. You go and get he won't do it for the price I would. So you're going to make it into an audiobook?
Yeah. Yeah, no, was that a genuine offer? You would like to do the audiobook?
I would love to do it, but I seriously think that you should consider doing it.
Right.
Purely and simply because, yes, you have got a good voice, and yes, it's your book. So when I'm listening to you, and this is why, whenever I listen, I only listen to autobiographies. Yeah. I don't listen to stories, anything like that. I love it when they're reading their own words, their own story, because I find it inspirational. So no, you know, joking aside, I think you'd be awesome at it, and I think it would mean so much more because it's going to be one of them books that I guess people are going to get something from it. Some enthusiasm, I just think you should do it.
That's a fair point, yeah. There's a certain... It would resonate more when it's the person actually speaking about their own, especially the autobiographical bit.
You get more inspiration from it. It's more true, I think. That's my honest opinion.
What I'll have to do is just have some
speech
coaching or something and get more of a radio voice. Yeah. Welcome to the BBC.
I don't trust this bloke. That's not Danny Wino.
Yeah.
So you reckon, I mean, you're going through the process. You started when?
Beginning of the year.
And you hopefully have it all done by the end of the year.
End of the year, yeah. I set myself the year to get it done. And I'm just, you know, it's basically halfway through, so, yeah.
And it'll be proofread and so on. You've had a break. Why have you had a break from it?
One, because work got very, very busy. And I was struggling to kind of put some real time to it. I was trying to do a page a day was what I was trying to do. And... then I got to a point where I had a significant mass of the book done. I've got it all framed out, and now really I just need to fill in the detail. It's the story bit which I'm kind of like I needed a break from because I needed the story to be resonate with the way that my mindset works, so that the story actually has some relevance with the autobiographical bit. Yeah, and you can and when my wife. Read through it, she straight away she was laughing at bits and pieces. And I said, "What are you laughing?" She goes, "Well, I know who that is, you know." And right. That's that situation. So there's a kind of the parable bit has some a real connection with me, my life, the people that are in my life, and because I've drawn from I'm not a writer. I don't know how to write. I've not taken any lessons with how to write your first book or whatever. I've literally just put the words down on paper and then gave it to Donna and said, "Tell me what you think." And she said, "Well, that's it." And I didn't even realise. So I then thought, well, that's what I need to do. I need to make sure that it is a really personal story and not just bits and pieces all put together. So I thought I'd take a little break from it, one, time-wise, but two, I just need to freshen my mind up again because I'd been kind of a bit relentless at it and it kind of wore me out a little bit.
So do you have to then, when you go back to it, do you have to then pre-read everything that you've done just to sort of remember what you have got down?
Yeah, this morning I've been having a flick through some pages and I've completely forgotten what I'd written. And then I see all the spelling mistakes as well. Look, some red pen on the first page already after Sam at Truck and I went, "That's wrong." So I've read that 20 times and I've just seen a spelling mistake in it. Yeah. So, yeah. And rereading some of the pages, I actually kind of thought, well, actually, this reads quite well. You know, if I'm reading this fresh again, and if this was something that was put in front of me, it actually does keep my attention. And Donna, my wife, she's a very honest individual. If it was rubbish, she would tell me it's rubbish. You know, she would say, "Don't waste your time. That's just garbage." And she's read the kind of the initial draft, which has probably 70% of the book there in principle. It just hasn't got some of the padding out bits to improve the story, because all the bit about me as a child is in there, and all the lessons learned. I did those kind of first, and then I used those bits to kind of create the story with regard to the parable, which is, you know, let's say it's a couple of characters. One's a kind of a natural teacher, and the other one's an unwilling student, you know, and it's about lessons of life and that sort of thing, and how one teaches the other one through different situations on how you can view your life, how you can take something you're not satisfied with. If you're in a place where you're not happy, this is how you can improve it. But it's on you. You have to back yourself. You're the only one that can change it. No one's going to do it for you. It's not a handout. You know, life is not a run through, as the song says. You've got to take control. And now, if you're not happy with where you are, then don't complain about it. I'm a real advocate of complaining is one of those completely pointless things, because all you're doing is just annoying somebody else apart from yourself. If you're complaining about where you are and the situation you're in, then change it in whatever small way. Even if it's taking an evening class of something you really love, you know, something you're passionate about. Even if it's just changing one part of your day, changing a small habit so that the day is improved. I would absolutely love. I'm not saying it's my ambition enough, but I would really love for, you know, people to be able to get up on a Monday morning and not be fearful of their day. So many people get up on a Monday morning and don't want to get out of bed. I enjoy the work that I do. You know, sometimes it's stressful, but I enjoy my job. I enjoy the career that I have. But I've created the career. This wasn't how I started. I've created what I have. And I take ownership of that, and I take responsibility for where I am. And if more people do that, I think a lot more people can actually then set themselves in a position where they can actually take themselves to a place where their life is happier. We all have to work, we have to pay the bills, you have to do that, but try doing something that you actually love, something you enjoy. If you want to get up in the Monday morning and be excited about your day, that's a far better place to be than to get up on a Monday morning and the drudgery of the day that's in front of you. Now, I'm not saying that everybody can go quit my job on a Friday and do something new on a Monday. It doesn't work that way. You know, I'm 54 now, I'm on my third career, and it's hard work to get to where I am now. It's been hard graft, you know, trying to take qualifications when you're dyslexic, doing evening classes when you've got two small children and a mortgage to pay and your wife works nights in hospital. That was tough, but I did it, and I got through it, and now I am where I am. You know, it may not be, you know, the millionaire lifestyle that some people think is the mark of success, but I'm very happy with my life. I like where I am, where I live, what I do, who I'm married to. I have two lovely children, you know. I'm going to be a granddad in September. Shout out to Jacob and my lovely daughter-in-law, Sarah, who is carrying my first grandchild due in September, which is going to be an amazing event in our life. And life is pretty good, you know, pandemic aside, you know.
Excellent. Do you know what? You've been talking for 3.5 minutes.
Have I? Without taking a breath?
No, without me interrupting. Okay, and I did that for a reason. One, what you were saying was interesting.
Yeah.
And two, I was just testing. Could I listen to your audiobook? And I could.
Oh, good.
So you've passed the test. You've passed the test. It's all fascinating stuff. It's interesting. Really, really interesting. I love the Monday morning analogy. I mean, I know that the problem I have with Monday mornings is I've probably had too much the night before. So maybe it's a case of don't have so much the night before, and then you might be able to seize the day better come Monday.
Yeah, yeah. But you enjoy your job, don't you? The work you do.
I love my job.
You love it, don't you? And that comes across. You can tell when I come in and when we talk, you are very passionate about radio and about the people that you speak to and the stories that you get involved in, and the I know you love your music. So you're working in an industry very similar to my son. My son is a passionate musician. He went to Platform One. Very, very talented young man. On a different level musically to most people. And he makes money out of his passion. He works in the music industry. He writes, produces, he plays, he performs. You know, he's got a great singing voice. He's an amazing lead guitarist. He wrote some amazing songs when he was a teenager and in his early 20s. You know, he's travelled around Europe with a band and that sort of stuff. He's done all those sort of things, and he lives his passion, and he makes money from something he absolutely loves. And if you can, what's the old adage? If you work at something that you love, or you make money from something you love, you never work a day in your life. Yeah? You make your business something you love, you never work a day in your life. And that's exactly it. You know, he gets up and he's excited about the next day. He's just been telling me about some music producing that he's doing with a guy that's a very popular rap artist at the moment. It's top secret, I think, so I'm not allowed to say who it is, but he's going to be doing some work with him.
Was there only one in there?
There's only one. It's not that one.
Oh, it's not him then.
I know, it's not that one. Whoever you're going to say, it's not that one. But, and so he was telling me about that yesterday, and, he's... he's so passionate about what he does. He absolutely loves what he does. And I wish for more people to have Monday mornings like my son Jacob does, because it would make the world such a better place if everybody got up on the Monday morning and was actually looking for, wouldn't it be nice if weekends were drab because you weren't working? That would be nice.
Oh, yeah, that would be. Although not this weekend.
2 days of misery before Monday.
Yeah, sun's out. It won't be miserable, I tell you. Look, we've got about 2.5-3 minutes to go.
Cool.
And I know what your background is. I'm excited for the book, and hopefully you're going to come back in on a regular basis now.
Yeah.
Because obviously we're going back to some kind of normality. Originally we got you in a couple of years ago because it was all about the fit mindset.
Yeah.
There'll be people out there struggling now with the fit mindset bit because of what's gone on. So what advice have you got for them?
Small habit changes is the easiest way to make a significant long-term difference. There's little bits in the book about how you actually apply the principles of my Fit Mindset Code, which is a 14-point action plan for taking yourself from point A to point B. And one of the key principles is habit changing. If you change something small, there's a big long-term effect. You can't do big changes. Big changes are unsustainable. They're too enormous. They take too much effort. It's too much energy to be able to change something big. So change something small on a daily basis. One of the sort of lessons in here, I give an analogy of brushing your teeth. Yeah, if you brush your teeth, 75,000 times in your lifetime, roughly. Yeah, if you brush your teeth a couple of times a day for 100 years or whatever, you cannot do that in one go and have good teeth.
Yeah? No,
it doesn't work. You just wear your teeth out. Yeah,
yep.
You have to brush your teeth twice a day, every day, for 100 years to have healthy teeth when you're 100. Yeah. So brushing your teeth, everybody does, because it's a good, sensible, hygienic, oral hygiene thing to do. It's sensible. We all know it's good. So we all do it. We get up in the morning, have breakfast, brush your teeth. Before you go to bed, brush your teeth. It's a little tiny thing that does nothing at that point in time, but in the long term, over the sustained period of time, it's very easy to do, and it has a huge effect on the health of your teeth over your lifetime. That's the lesson for everybody.
That
small things, little tiny steps over a long period of time have a much bigger effect.
That really does make sense. Hey, look, it's really good to see you.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited for the book. And I'm really hoping that you do come out, you bring it out on Audible or audio, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That, there are other platforms are available.
Yeah.
And honestly, good luck with it.
Thank you.
And I hope to see you back here again soon.
Yeah.
And let's just big up your wife once again, because she's one of the heroes, one of many at St Mary's that have been working through not just the last 18 months, but working through her entire
life. She, like all of them up there, they are living and breathing angels. And we are so blessed that we have individuals that are willing to put themselves in that position for us, because I know personally I couldn't do what they do.
No, living and breathing angels. I like that.
That's what they are.
Is that going to be in the book as well? Is that a line in the book?
It may well be.
With the tribute at the end. You better do the tribute. Living and breathing angel.
Yeah, the forward will be to my lovely wife Donna, who is an amazing woman.
Excellent. Maybe there'll be a book about her in the, you know, the next one.
Oh, I think it's a one-time only offer. Okay. Oh, I don't think I could write another.
Danny Stimson, it's really brilliant to see you. Yeah, hopefully we'll see you back very soon. It's 14 minutes away from one. Don't forget, John's here at 1 o'clock.